She's in Birmingham now?
She's in Birmingham. She moved up there 6 months ago or something like that. And then she's just working there now.
How is that affecting Sparrow and the Ghost?
Well, it's affecting it a lot. Some negative, some positive. But the songwriting's a lot different now. It's, you know, she used to just be there all the time to be my, like, critic, you know. So I'd write something and I'd play it and she'd be like, you know, she'd be like, that's shit or that's really good, but keep change this part. She's by far the best thing that could have happened for me for songwriting. So that's different. So I have to, like, write something or, like, record it on my phone and send it to her. Or when she comes in town, we have to, like, you know, the last time we played in March for, or June or what it was, for Acoustic Night, you know, she came in town, like, early that afternoon. We went over, like, a new song that afternoon and ended up playing it. So that's hard. That's difficult. But the good thing is it's spreading out our shows and making them more of an event, you know, because we just really ran ourselves dry here. And so that's good. It's allowing time to focus on the record and whatever.
What do you mean you ran yourselves dry?
You know, you play so often as, like, an original band. If you start playing so much, people just don't care anymore. You know, it's just like, oh, well, I can see them anytime. Me and Rachel always just felt like, you know, we would go out and do, like, cover stuff and whatever, but, you know, I kind of hated using the name Sparrow and the Ghost when we would go play shows like that, because that's not who we are. I don't think it's pretentious at all to say that me and her just felt that. I think those songs demanded more respect, and they need attention. They're very, like, very greedy and very selfish, but they need it. I mean, rightfully so. I mean, we poured a lot of time and heartfelt work into it, so, you know, I feel like that it's normal for anybody that puts their heart into work, you know?
Yeah. Are you saying that, like, if someone was starting a band, a very good band in Tuscaloosa or anywhere locally, you wouldn't push them to play every week or multiple times per week? Would you instead tell them to sort of, like, spread it out and make your appearances more rare in town so that it does become more of an event for people to see you?
Absolutely. I think what I would do if I could, if I had to tell a band now, that was actually good.
Yeah.
I would, you know, obviously get a demo together. I would tell them just go out, go around wherever you're from and get your practice up. So when people start to hear, like, oh, this band keeps playing in Birmingham, they're playing in Florence, they're playing in Mississippi, whatever, Mobile. It's like, why don't you guys play here, you know? By that time, you're crafting your sound, and now you're really rehearsed. So when you actually come back and play that one show in your hometown and get, you know, some friends or whatever together and advertise it well, then you can really make an impression on people. But if they were from Tuscaloosa, I'd just tell them, just don't worry about it.
Why would you say that about Tuscaloosa?
Well, nobody cares. There are people that care, I guess, but it doesn't matter. If Tuscaloosa loves you, it doesn't matter. You know, if Nashville and Birmingham, or Nashville or Florence or Birmingham or Atlanta or New Orleans, if those places love you, that matters. But, you know, I just never felt like it was a part of our culture, really.
What does it mean to matter in that regard?
Matter, that's a good question. I think places like in Nashville that see so much shit and so much good stuff all the time. Places like New Orleans or Florence or Atlanta. If those people like you, because they see everything, if those people like you, you're doing something right. You know? So if you can start drawing crowds there, you're really doing good. And those are places where the people that see you matter. You know, there's big music communities there and, you know, good connections. But here, if people love you, you're... What are you going to do? Are you going to play the Jupiter? You're not going to get booked at the amphitheater, you know. We play Acoustic Night, and that's, like, our favorite thing. That's it. That's worth it. That's fine for me. You know, that's good.
So why stick around, though?
Because I'm blindly in love with this town. I've been here for, like, 15 or 16 years. It doesn't matter where you're from if you're making good music, you know. It's just about getting it out there. If people like it, that's great, but...
It can matter where you are, though, right? Because you guys are obviously talented enough and driven enough to take your talent somewhere else. Like, say, even Birmingham, to where you both could be in Birmingham and could be marketing your stuff a little bit more, a lot more so than you could in Tuscaloosa.
Right. Oh,
yeah. So why do you stick around in Tuscaloosa when you two have the capability to go somewhere else?
You get to a certain point where, like, like I'm 23 and now like I really have to work. And now I kind of have a somewhat of a life, you know, I'm working like 3 jobs and, you know, and I've got a girlfriend here. And to understand that aspect, you have to know me and Rachel's relationship, you know, and how we lived together and dated for 3 years and then broke up and it was awful. And then this like little hiatus, and then decided that the music was more important than our like emotional shit. Like we were like, those songs deserve to be recorded. They deserve to be played. That's kind of how we always felt. So moving to Birmingham is kind of difficult, you know. It's not like I could just pick up and leave, but I've got so much responsibility here right now. If there could be a time where I could just get up and go,
but yeah,
that time was this past year, and I just didn't do it. I wanted to move to New Orleans real bad, but I didn't want to be away from Alabama and home.
Yeah, you said you're blindly in love with this town.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that a little bit and why that might be keeping you here. Obviously, you have the responsibilities. You have a girlfriend here, so it's not so easy to where you can just pick up and go. But being blindly in love with the town, it seems like the way you describe it is almost like that's a curse in a way.
Yeah.
To where you can't leave because you love it so much.
Yeah.
But this is the same place where you as an artist might not be able to flourish as much as you could in somewhere like New Orleans or Nashville.
Exactly. It's just like the trucker's blessing and a curse, man. I moved around a lot as a kid, so when we came here in 97, it was finally home. And, you know, and then my parents moved to Tennessee after, you know, and I was still here, and then they moved to New York. You know, my family's constantly moving. So having, like, a home was so important, even when my family was leaving. I grew up, you know, fourth grade on. I grew up here, and I moved to Tennessee for like a year, you know, after that, but I always miss Tuscaloosa. I miss my friends. I don't know. Yeah, there is a weird, like, weird thing about this town. It's just, it's so comfortable. It's such easy living, man. Like, it's great. I live at the corner of, like, Queen City University, and I walk to work every day. You know, I go anywhere and, you know, pretty much know somebody. I mean, you grew up here, right? So, you know.
It's home.
Yeah, it's home.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, what else can you, how can you describe it? But you're right about, you know, creatively, you know, you move somewhere else. Yeah, you could probably flourish a lot better. So in a way now, you know, I've got a lot of people lighting fire under our asses about getting this damn record done and coming back, you know, and Reed Watson's been, he's been pushing my ass to get it done too. And now he's playing with the Polys and all that. Just have a lot of friends who I respect that have been pushing us along. Like Lydia from the Secret Sisters has been really supportive and, you know, constantly getting on my ass about it, and vice versa. I'm ready for that, her second record to come out. But so it makes you have to learn how to make things work, and it's been making me work harder now. And now she's gone, and now I have to like force myself now to, like, I sit down at my typewriter and I'm like, okay, I got to at least start a song or finish a song each week. So that's like my thing.
What stage are you in right now with the record?
We had recording time set 2 weeks ago in Birmingham. We had to cancel it. I couldn't get up there. Something to do with work. And she, you know, she couldn't get over to the studio or whatever. So it really kind of blew up in her face. But we got it. You know, we have a friend of ours that is paying for it, which is crazy. So now, it's been delayed so long because I'm going to be such a perfectionist asshole about this record. And I always feel like I don't have enough songs. We got like 20, 22 songs right now that we could use or go in and do. And I just, the thought of like going in there and then like the week, and getting it done, and then like the week later, like I write like what I think is like the best shit ever. And I'm like, that would just be my nightmare. So I have to get over that and just do it. I'm terrified of going in there and it coming out, and I'm not happy with it. So that's a big phobia. That's why it's taken so long, honestly. I'm terrified of it.
So you're kind of putting it off in a way.
Oh yeah, I've been putting it off.
Yeah.
Like subconsciously and consciously in the same way. You know what I mean?
Are you going to record all the songs that you have, or are you going to stick to a certain number? Like, once you decide on which songs you want to record.
Yeah, the goal is to just go in there and do as much as we can. Ben Tenner asked to do our record for us, like, a year ago. And we were like, shit, yeah. And then the Alabama Shakes happened, so we were like, shit, we're never going to see you again. So we were going to go to Shoals and do it. But now, we still might do some tracks at Fame, but now we're with Lester Newby, who did CBDB's record. He asked us if he could do it, like, 6 months ago, and we were like, sure. So that's what we're doing with him in Birmingham. So apparently he does great work. I'm excited, and he seems relaxed. It's nice to have a producer that's, like, excited and wants to do it. That's important, and that he cares, and he actually likes the music, you know. He's not just in there like, all right, go again, you know, where's my money?
You said before you dated Rachel, and you had a tough breakup, and at some point you decided the music was too important to just abandon. There are a lot of people out there who aren't going to understand what that means, and just that, you know, they would think that that would be an impossible situation.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
Yeah, so, I mean, how do you explain that, that the music is too important to abandon, and you're able to reconnect with the person you created that with at a certain point in your lives, too, and to carry that on without revisiting where you created it together?
There are certain songs that are hard to get through, for sure. But when she left and traveled for a while, and I think that really helped. There was space. We got all this time. I was writing so much, you know, and she was starting to play guitar while she was traveling. So it's funny. That's, you know, that's why I think we still to this day can remain good friends, is because, you know, A, we still love each other, but B, you can look at it, the proof is in the pudding. Like, we both are at, like, this awful time in our lives, and we both immediately turn to music for, like, medicine, therapy. When we sing together and we play together, you know, I've been playing out in bars. My first show, I was 16 at the booth, you know, the old booth.
Right.
When I first sang with her, I knew right away. I was like, oh my God, okay, there's something new. So to not act on that would just be just foolish. I mean, it would just be, it would be insane. Because, you know, you just, like I said, you just don't stumble onto that. So when people are like, how do you do it? You know, I'm like, well, in a way, playing is making it us get over that. We're forced to share the very intimate thing together and understand that that is, you know, what is important, and that's it. So it's been probably the best healing thing out of it all.
So you write a ton of original music, and you have Sparrow and the Ghost, and you have other things that you're working on, but you also play cover sets with folks like Cat and probably some other people.
Yeah, James Blankenship.
Stuart Von Trio.
Right? Yeah, that's always random people.
Just whoever makes up the
trio. Whoever I can call up and wants to play.
Is the acoustic thing to keep your chops up? Is it for money? Is it just to play for fun? Or, I mean, I know it's fun because, I mean, I've talked to Cat and him and other people and Billy Snowden and other people, and they like doing it because, yeah, you get paid, but you also get to play a room.
Yeah.
But for you, someone who specializes in original music, it can't be nearly as fulfilling. Right?
Oh, absolutely right. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, why do you keep going back to that?
Well, everything you said right off the bat, I mean, A, you know, A, B, C, that's pretty much it. Yeah, A, I love it. You know, like yesterday I had just the worst double I've ever had waiting tables, and all I could think about was, okay, after this I get to go to Top Shop and play with two guys I've never played before, and I get to, like, just kind of release all that out and just do a bunch of blues songs. It is what it is. I mean, I'll always remember when my dad told me when I was having to do cover songs when I was in National Trust, and I was all, I want to play my music, you know. And he was like, well, you got to learn how to play the hits first before you can write one. So it helps, man. It really helps. And you hear, you know, I play, like, these Bryan Adams or Jason Isbell songs, or even, like, Lightning Hopkins songs, and try to play them differently each time, or I'll vocally try to do something different, and I remember those chords, and if I go back and write something, I'll think of a melody that was similar to that. Or it is right. I mean, you got to learn how to play covers to know how to write one, pretty much. It help, and I think it does help when you, yeah, when you do your original stuff. You can feel that room if there's a song that really hits well, and even if it's a cover, you know, or a cover that doesn't hit well. So you kind of pick up on things like that. But yeah, man, it gets tiring, but, you know, in the same way, that's not where I get, you know, my rocks. You know, that's not where I get my rocks off, you know. And I go home and write those songs and play Sparrow and the Ghost. That's where it's the real, that, I get that itch. You know, I'm playing with James Blankenship now, and I'm ready for his EP to come out. I will be behind him wherever he wants to go. you know, as long as I can do it. You know, and when Billy Snowden makes his record, I'll be there recording with him. And
you were born where?
Akron, Ohio.
And how did you end up here from there?
Akron, Ohio. My dad took a teaching job in Little Rock, Arkansas. Chelsea Clinton was his hall monitor. Then we moved to St. Louis, and he went to Covenant Theological Seminary because he wanted to become a teacher in the church, I guess, or something like that. And then he ended up being a pastor, which he didn't know he was going to do. So I remember the day that he said, you know, I got a pastoring job, and it's in a town called Tuscaloosa. And we were all like, whoa, what? What is that? And so then we moved here, and he got a job at Riverwood Presbyterian Church, and he was pastoring there for years and years, up until 2007, I think was his last year. And then he took an RUF job at Tennessee Tech in Cookeville, and I moved up there for like almost a year. Now I moved back. So they went on, and that's it.
What year was that?
2008, I think I left. Or maybe it was mid-2007 to like mid-2008. Maybe, yeah.
Do you have any brothers and sisters?
I got an older brother, Brett, who lives in Orlando. My little brother, Tate, he lives here in town. He manages the Northport Jimmy John's. And I got a little sister, Leanna. She lives in Franklin, Tennessee.
Any other music in the family? Musicians?
Yeah, my mother played guitar and played piano and oboe and flute. And my dad could play the piano. They met in choir. So a lot of singers. Apparently my granddad could play a honky-tonk piano like a mofo, but I never knew it. Never heard him play it. And apparently the Bond side of the family has a lot of bluegrass and country musicians who I've never met. But that's what they say. You know, my uncle goes to reunions, and he's always like, dude, you gotta go. Yeah, that's it. But it's, you know, music-loving family. My dad was always playing, like, he was always pushing music on me. Always Billy Joel in the house, and the Beatles in the house, Springsteen, and my mom was always doing show tunes, or like John Denver, Barry Manilow, or ABBA, and Bee Gees, so a lot of melody in the house. That was always very important.
Where did your knowledge and your taste, when in your life did it develop? When did you become such a fan of the songwriters that you're currently influenced by?
I don't know, man. Like, in 7th grade, I remember I would just, like, write lyrics all the time. And I would do it a lot in math class because I was terrible at math. So I guess I started writing songs like that around 7th grade. But everybody has these certain little moments that, like, are epic for, like, your music or whatever. And I have those moments. Like, I remember the first time I heard the Beatles Revolver. That was like, oh my God, like, this is the greatest thing ever. And the first time I saw the Strokes video for Last Night, huge for like a, you know, a 7th grader who grows up on NSYNC, Backstreet Boys, and who are these long-haired, like, skinny guys in all these vintage clothing and this, like, vintage-looking set. That was a big game-changer. My grandfather was always playing, like, Cash and Old Country, and there was always a lot of bluegrass in the house. So, like any normal kid, I rebelled against that and went, I found punk music, and I found, like, Black Flag and The Damned, and, you know, The Clash and the Ramones were so huge to me, and Minutemen, God Bless Mike Watt, and Firehose, like, Anarchy, those guys were so, Misfits, oh my God, that was so huge. So I was really into that, you know, and then somebody gave me, Joey Thompson gave me the MC5s, Kick Out the Jams, The Faces Ooh La La, and T-Rex 20th Century Boy, all in one day after church. That was epic. And then I don't know where Ryan came in. I know the bass player for The Bridges, Isaacah Bird, she gave me Cold Roses. That was the first real Ryan Adams record I listened to. To answer your question, though, the real songwriting turn point was that. I mean, she gave me Cold Roses, and that was, it was as if everything I'd heard up until then didn't matter. I was just like, okay, that is perfect. I was like, this record is perfect from front, you know, start to finish. I mean, it's tattooed on my arm. Like, I mean, I'm obsessed with that record.
Would you call your music specifically Southern?
You know, most people just always say, like, no, because they don't want to pigeonhole themselves.
Right.
But absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I work for the Alabama Blues Project, so, and the blues started everything to me. And it started here. It started in the South and in New Orleans. So, and all that, all of what we, you know, especially Sparing the Ghost comes from is all that stuff before. You know, the Sun Houses, the Robert Johnsons, the, you know, Earl Scruggs and Hank and all the early stuff, and it's all Southern music. So, yeah. And you know, if you listen to the songs, I take a real big influence from just the sound, and I have such big pride in it now. And I'm a big Civil War nerd, so I always have big pride in it. I love it. But, yeah, absolutely. I think if you ask anybody, any, like, good band, if they say that they're not influenced by Southern music at all, they are fucking lying. It's crazy how many people have no idea about, like, Muscle Shoals and, like, what history has been made there. And in this state, like, 2 hours up 43, you know. And great music that's come out of here. But, yeah, absolutely Southern.
Well, Alabama has had an interesting year in terms of music. Obviously, with the Alabama Shakes, right? And Lee Banks is doing well. The Civil Wars have been breaking, obviously, in the mainstream for the past couple of years.
Yeah, so man.
Potential regionally is being realized.
Yeah.
People are being heard nationwide. Does that give you comfort?
Man, absolutely. Like, it has been, me and Rachel have always just, like, looking at each other like, what the hell is going on? Because like you said, yeah, I mean, the Shakes, all the obvious ones, but even like, I had in 1 week, I had three friends play like Letterman and Leno and like Fallon. And I'm just like, what is going on? Like a year ago, they were in my living room, we're eating like frozen pizza, and now they're on national TV.
Who are you talking about specifically?
Secret Sisters and the Shakes. You know, Civil Wars, Doc and the Bear are doing great things. But it's so cool to see people like, I don't know if that radar's just going to go away. Maybe people are just fed up with this dubstep shit coming out of the north. But, man, and it's, hopefully it's turning back to the way it used to be. Like, best music in the world is coming out of this state. And it's crazy to say, like, and my friends are proof of that. So, yeah, it's totally comforting. It's totally keeps us motivated to see that, you know, like, yeah, I mean, if that can happen, you know, it's all just luck, it's just all whatever, stars lining, but it's totally possible, you know. You watch out for the Pollies too. They'll be up in the next year or two. You're gonna see them up there too.
So last question.
Yeah.
How long do you see yourself staying in Tuscaloosa and doing what you're doing now? Because you have reasons to stay, but you also have reasons to go. And I just didn't know how often the thought entered your mind to jet and go somewhere else and try it somewhere else.
Yeah.
Or just stick around and market it a different way.
Yeah.
I guess from a digital standpoint.
Right.
So do you have a timeline for yourself?
No, not really. Such an odd time at 23, you know? I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, still very young, you know? I mean, anything is possible.
Yeah, I really, really miss the road. I'll say that. This is the longest time I've gone without being on the road since I was, like, 17. So this year has been really hard as far as that goes. I miss it so much. So, you know, as long as I got the road and as long as I can make records, I don't have a reason to go anywhere else, you know. Yeah, Alabama football will still come on ESPN, but, you know, I'd rather be here.
You're a fan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it took me a long time. You know, my dad's a UT grad, I grew up with UT.
Right.
But, and all my friends were always saying, man, you're going to be a Bama fan one day. And
yeah.
I remember the first time I saw, like, Auburn something on TV, and like I said out loud, and I was like, man, screw the Auburn, and I was like, why did I just say that? I was like, it's in the water, man.
Yeah, it's in your blood now.
It is now. Yeah,
apparently.